why'd the
Interesting.
NEOs get grounded?
Engines aren't working right.
Oh, details.
Pratt & Whitney.
Oh man, Boz, you really can't fly. You got Pratt & Whitney problems, you got GE, and you got Rolls-Royce. Dude, you're stuck on the ground, man.
It's 717s. They have BMW engines, right?
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Boz Mamoon, and Seth Miller. So American Airlines is dropping charter flights for like six football teams, NFL teams.
Yeah, they're going to go down to three, basically. I guess they're doing nine today.
And some of them, I mean, Pittsburgh is a little surprising because it's kind of a former U.S. Air mini hub, I guess.
Phoenix, former U.S. Air hub, major hub.
Yeah, major hub. Yeah, major hub.
Still technically a hub, still operationally a hub. Also, wait a minute, I'm sorry, but I'm now looking at the photo on this story.
It's got a United plane.
It's got a United battleship gray livery photo.
Yep.
that was
at least
the
they properly
the
captioned it. It does call it out as a United charter flight, but so they're keeping Carolina, Dallas, and Philly.
It shows where their love is, right?
But the interesting part of that, but the whole interesting thing was they claim they're doing it because they won't have enough aircraft.
Which in the fall off-peak travel season is sort of hard to believe.
Right. So the question is, how many aircraft are they parking?
Like how many are they putting, like putting them in the desert?
Right. I mean, it's either one of two things, right? It's either retrofits, C&D checks that they're being pulled first, so they might not have enough, or they're parking some. You know, with the market that's thinning, particularly across, the Atlantic, they've been shrinking a lot of the routes. They've been withdrawing, like Manchester, Chicago just went from a 7.8 to a 7.6 to now a 7.5.
Wow.
I saw that 7.8 last summer. It was fun to see coming to Manchester.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so,
completely useless, non sequitur, sorry.
But there's definitely a lot of shrinking going on. So one can presume that they're going to be parking some planes.
Yeah, I would think.
Or it's the retrofits because they're trying to finally catch stuff up, but who knows? Or maybe they're going to announce some crazy redistribution and expansion of commercial service. That seems less likely.
But how far behind are they on their retrofits?
They actually might not be that far anymore.
Yeah,
that's, I believe they've caught up, or they're not that far off at this point. So it's kind of surprising.
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things is like to fly a charter for Jacksonville. It's basically a plane out of service for like 3 days, right? Because you got to get it down there, and it's a wide body. You've got to get it from whatever hub it was at over to Jacksonville, pick them up, fly to the game, wait overnight, and then wait another full day, and then fly them home the end of that night, and put it back in position.
But Charlotte to Jacksonville is not a far haul.
Or Miami should be easy, right? Yeah, right. None of them are more than 2 hours from one of the hubs, but it's still aircraft out of position, out of sequence, out of operations for whatever else you're trying to do. I mean, could they be trying to put more wide bodies on domestic routes to increase domestic lift?
So I'm looking.
That seems to be all the rage these days, right?
Right, but so and presumably that they were doing a lot of these with 763s, which the retrofits weren't really negatively impacted because they weren't using the Zodiac seat. But I'm looking right now at air fleets, and it looks like they've gone from 55 763s down to 31 active.
Oh, so well, that could do it.
Yeah, I guess they are parking a lot of these.
And are they still running any 762s?
No, they were only doing the Transcon stuff.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that was their PS, whatever they call it, flagship Transcon.
Yeah.
So when they got the 321Ts, those went away.
Yeah. So I guess that explains it then a little bit about where the planes are going. Do charters make good money for airlines?
I always thought so.
Yeah.
Particularly in the winter, I'm sure they do, because they're planes that would otherwise just sit there.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
I think that's the big key to it is it's slack demand in the schedule anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like we have some extra flights or we have some extra space on a plane. We have a plane that's kind of going to sit empty, so let's put some people on it and we can make those people charter passengers.
Yeah, I think like the counter argument to that is there was a thread on Flyer Talk about the total eclipse that's coming this summer, and someone was complaining that there's not a wide body to Jackson Hole on a random Saturday in August.
Can a wide body even land a Jackson Hole?
Okay, let's put mainline. Let's settle for just mainline. I think the answer is no. I'd have to check the runway specs. But it was interesting. Is like in August, especially like August, like summer weekends in August are huge demand. Maybe not on a Saturday, but Friday and Sunday are massive demand. Those are like the busiest travel days of the year for airlines typically. And then, you know, counter that with random Sundays or Saturdays in, you know, September, October, November. It just seems like there should be some slack in the schedule better.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, speaking of that eclipse, so, you know, it's kind of go through the center of Oregon. And yeah. It's like there's Bend, which is there's an airport there. It's Redmond, I think, is the airport. And it's big. It's got like it's the biggest airport outside of a major metropolitan area up here. And I am a little surprised they're not putting a wide body on that one, because they could. Like the airlines or the runway's long enough for that. Because there's so many people. I mean, like they're opening up like an extra 1,000 campsites for the eclipse. That's how many. There's a lot of people that want to come here and see it. Because out in Central Oregon, you'll actually have, unless there's clouds, you'll have a pretty good view.
Yeah. So you've got theoretically the right weather, and it's a good path and ambient light.
Yep.
Not really a problem.
Yep. And you can get the total eclipse. So
nice.
Yeah. We will not be driving out there. I don't want to sit in that traffic.
So just to close out, American parked 10 763s in 2015 and 14 in 2016.
Oh, wow.
But they've only acquired 18 788s.
Hmm.
Yeah. And so they had previously announced that they were slowing some of their wide body acquisitions, right? Didn't they defer the 350s for a while?
I believe so, yeah.
So that sort of explains that they're cutting. Obviously, charter is not quite as keen for the business as the regular commercial ops.
Yeah.
But why would you put new seats in these planes and put them out to pasture so quickly?
Do we know for sure they had the new seats?
I thought they were done with all of them. Maybe they did.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
December's the last one that was parked. I haven't seen anything in 2017, but they parked one as recently as December.
Hmm. So, interesting. A man and his fiance, I should say, were kicked off a United flight in Houston.
Again?
Another couple. And this time the reasoning was they were poaching E-plus seats after being told to move back to their originally purchased regular economy seats.
Yeah, I like that their statement to the media is, it was just another economy class seat a couple rows away.
Yeah, and then they said the row number, it was like 21.
It's 21. It's exit row.
Yeah, it's exit row. So they don't really have much of a case. But, I mean, there was a big kerfuffle about this after the incident in Chicago. And people are making a big deal out of this. But
Were either of them wearing leggings?
We're not going to talk about that, Seth.
Oh, come on.
Come on. That was perfect.
Oh, man.
I mean, so I take all these incidents and I just, like, I look at them and I view them as a reason that the public is using to just hate airlines in general.
Yeah.
Because they're not understanding the actual challenges or what actually has happened.
And to be fair, airlines hate passengers too, but.
Self-loading cargo.
There's absolutely a sense of that in some ways. Like, no one is blameless. In this case, certainly, like, the passengers being told by the flight attendants, go back to your seats, you can't have these. If you ask around, the theory from travelers is like, you know, they should protect those seats. It's questionable. You know, the report was like there was someone sprawled across all three seats to begin with, and that's why they took the alternate seats. I would think, like, if that's really a problem, you would get rid of the guy sprawled out.
Yeah.
Not, right? Like, if this guy's, like, passed out drunk across three seats or whatever, take him off the plane and give these two people the seats they were supposed to have. I don't know. It's all stupid.
It seems like it was a really easy excuse to say, oh, we can move up to these other seats because the plane's partial. I mean, one of the comments was the plane was very empty. So clearly we should be able to move
spread
to those
out.
Seats. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's not how it works. Those seats, actually someone pays extra for those seats. So you want to pay extra? Yeah, you can do that. I wonder if that was afforded, you know, they were given that option. If you want to pay for these seats, you can, because the flight attendants can take payment, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I
mean, they can run that on their iPhones or whatever.
So,
Speaking of, have you seen that Delta actually sells Comfort? Have you seen on like Google Flights, Delta sells Comfort Plus as premium economy now?
Yeah. So I was wondering about that because I sent a message.
It throws me off every time I see it.
Yeah. And so I sent you guys a message because I wanted to know what their Comfort Plus product was. And I went to their website and they finally have like a real premium economy seat picture of like what it's going to be. And it's like a proper.
That's on the 350s though. That's not on.
Is that not going to get
stuff?
But it's not going to get fitted to like the 767s?
I don't know what they're doing for the other wide bodies, honestly. Welcome to our show. Have you met us before? I know that that's the goal is to put that on the 350s first and then expand it from there. But I don't remember the exact rollout plans.
I got you. Yeah, I wonder, you know, were they offered this opportunity? Were they, were they just told to move? Which, they should move. I mean, there comes a point where you have to listen to the flight crew, right? That's the rules.
Well, apparently, it is no longer the rules, based on the behavior we're seeing from people.
I just, it's like riding a bus.
It'll be on the 350s and then roll out on the 777s in 2018.
Gotcha. Okay.
Those used 777s are getting for $5 a piece.
Yeah. It was like $7, man. Come on.
Oh, sorry. By the time they'll get them, they'll be five.
Nah, fair enough. I don't know. Like, I think, Stephen, this goes back to one of the questions you raised after the whole bump thing of like, at what point in this case, like the police were called and, or they said a marshal, maybe an air marshal. I don't know. But authorities helped remove the passengers from the plane. Was this a case where, like, you know, we're not going to use authorities to get people off our planes? Obviously, that's not 100% absolutely true. So there is now this situation, like, we won't do it if we need to bump you, but if there's something else that's real, like, if you've broken the rules, maybe we will.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have a conspiracy theory on the whole dragging someone out off the plane. I think it was Delta. To detract from all the problems they had last weekend.
Oh, they forced the oversale?
No, I think they just forced the incident. He was on the take.
Interesting. So that's actually who he was talking to on his cell phone?
Well, I mean, he said he was going to sue, right? And that, you know, it was premeditated at that point.
I think we've come to this, like, one, I think there's like there's misinformation from people about like what involuntary bumps are and like what your rights are on the plane and what your ticket entitles you to. And it's like, well, I paid for my ticket. This is my seat. And yes, that's true, but there are rules and you signed a contract essentially buying that ticket. And so I feel like everyone just comes to these conclusions and goes, you know what? Screw the airline. And United's a great scapegoat. Did they respond? Now let's be clear. Did they respond to the social media outpouring in a positive manner in a way that was, you know, conducive to fixing the issue? Originally, no. No, it was awful. It was absolutely awful. And I do think they could have de-escalated the whole situation by just offering a lot more money up front.
Maybe not. Like, I've been on flights where they go up to, like, 1,500, 2,000, people don't want to come off. Like, you get to those situations where you want to go where you're going because the alternate arrangement's too far out.
Yeah, I think part of it is they were poor alternate arrangements. Could they have said $1,000 and we'll hire a taxi to drive you instead of $1,000 and wait 24 hours?
Yeah, or rent you a car or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I've been put in a taxi, not for a four-hour ride, but I've had a bump plus an hour or 2 hour drive at the end arranged for in the past. They give you a taxi voucher at baggage claim when you arrive.
Yeah.
So options, but this one clearly was a disaster.
I mean, one thing we can talk about is, you know, in light of this, American and Delta both came out and changed their max allowed VDB amounts, voluntary denied boarding. So if you volunteer to get off, and Delta's going up to $10,000, and I've had people like text me over the weekend going, did you see that you can get $10,000? I'm like, that's never going to happen because they don't have to give you more than $1,350 because that's what the IDB policy says.
And so they could, right? That's the goal, is they're going to try to get to even fewer involuntaries by getting higher on the voluntaries.
Right.
And that may or may not actually happen. But I think what's going to be amusing is the number of people who saw that one news clip and then like, you know, a gate agent announces we're looking for volunteers and someone walks up and is like, yeah, so I get 10,000, right? And you can see that happening.
Oh yeah, could you imagine a $10,000 VDB?
Guess I'm flying business class, boys.
That's most of your top tier status requirement for a dollar spend.
Yeah. Do one. Maybe I just want to go get IDB'd. I'm going to start booking tickets for Thanksgiving now.
We already missed spring break, so
we do know some people that have been bump runners.
Yeah.
It's all well and good until you get banned from flying an airline.
Yeah.
Well, it's one thing to do it multiple times a week.
Yes, and that is a very different approach to the problem.
So, question then is, what do you guys see going forward as far as enforcement of rules and safety of the aircraft? And I mean, because right now it's like, if the pilot comes on and says, you're not flying, if he comes up to you and says, you're not flying with us today, it's kind of like, okay, you can get off the plane peacefully and quietly, or we can call the police, because the pilot is in charge of the plane. Do you guys think that's going to happen going forward?
I'm just surprised people are, like, fighting things. I mean, like, to me, anytime law enforcement gets involved, it's game over.
Yeah. Like,
which I don't necessarily appreciate, or, like, think is a good answer, but it's the situation we're stuck with at this point.
Yeah.
And you can handle it at the gate. Like, I think this guy said, if I get off the plane, they're going to fly, take off without me. And so I'm just not going to do that. Because if I'm on here, the plane can't leave.
Well, I mean, but there's, like, I was thinking about this. There are a couple other things United could have done, right? They could have, A, just canceled the flight, made everyone get on, and just fly the plane empty with four people, the four crew members that need to go there. They could have canceled the flight, reinstated it as a different flight number, and just select who got to move. Right? I mean, there's sneaky ways of doing it, but it achieves the same thing.
Yeah. And one question I have that still hasn't really been answered anywhere, maybe you guys know now. How did he get back on the plane?
Apparently the door was still open, and while they were dealing with him, he made a break for it, but it's not entirely clear.
Oh my gosh. Like, doesn't that violate a federal law or something somewhere, I would think?
That was the second time he violated federal law. The first time was when he didn't listen to the cops.
I don't know. So anyway, back to this couple. We've gone completely off track.
Yeah, they got to fly the next day, and they left peacefully.
Yeah, but now it's a big news story. And they're being pretty rough in their treatment of United as well, saying, we can't believe they handled it this way. But when in reality, the truth is they probably were poaching seats that they were not entitled to.
Well, I mean, this is a Me Too situation, you know, from the brief read that I got ahead. And the reality is, you know, these things will happen. But right now people are hating on airlines and just trying to capitalize on that.
Yeah. All right. Enough of that. Enough of that. Maybe next week will be more positive in the airline world. We'll see. The BA flight that had an engine fire at Las Vegas, there's some notes that have come out between the communication of the pilots and air traffic control and the fire officials. And Seth, you had mentioned it was a little interesting what the communications
were.
Yeah,
so the initial sort of documentation from the NTSB came out last week. Or maybe it's 2 weeks ago by the time this comes out, but, you can sort of read through. So some of it is summary state, like there's summaries of the interviews with the flight crew, plus the written statements verbatim, just scanned, you know, handwritten documents from the cabin crew. And there's some other stuff in there too. There's actually the cockpit voice recorder transcript is there, mm-hmm. and it's surprisingly sparse. Like they had to do an emergency fire checklist and evacuation checklist. And I would have thought that there'd be like conversation back and forth going through like this done, clear, go, green, whatever.
Yeah.
And I didn't hear it. I like reading the transcript. I didn't see a ton of that. So I don't know if it was excerpted out to only get like the good stuff, but that was interesting to me. But also like reading through all the documents, every single person who I think of the 13 total crew on board essentially said they thought it was a blown tire. Right, it was a loud bang and the plane veered off. The pilot said he didn't do full braking on the rejected takeoff because he thought it was a blown tire.
And didn't want to blow more, probably.
Didn't want to blow more, didn't want to overheat the brakes. But also, it's interesting, there was a third pilot in the flight deck. They do it as an augmented crew for that trip. And the official procedures don't, for all the emergency stuff, don't have a third pilot there.
Hmm.
So a couple of them said it was a little challenging having that there, and not like the guy said, I wasn't sure what I was supposed to do. And while they were running checklists, I asked, should I go back into the cabin and see if I can see anything? And they said yes. And then they continued running checklists. He went back, saw the fire, came back and said, we got a GTFO right now. And while he was gone, the other two who were still on the flight deck were talking, maybe we need to evacuate. And he came back in and it was like, you know, they hit the button, called evac, evac, evac right away. But it's just like, it's a little things like that. There's 8 slides on a 77W. Mm-hmm. Or is it 77W or 772?
It was a 2.
Either way, there's 8 slides. There's 4 sets of doors. 6 of the 8 were in up.
What?
Wait.
So 3 of them were not open due to hazards.
Okay.
Right? There's fire. Like, so you don't open into fire. One of them, they opened. 1L, they opened. A few people went out and the fire started creeping forward, so they stopped. And I'm pulling up my list here of all of them. So, let's see. Da, 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 da. Yeah, only 1R and 4L ended up used. 1L, 2L, 2R, and 3L were all considered fire and smoke unusable. 3R, the slide did not inflate.
Oops.
And the flight attendant there couldn't get the door open. A passenger had to help do it. And at 4R, the door opened, the slide deployed, but was blowing in the wind and wouldn't hit the ground and like never made it to the ground. They said it was basically horizontal instead of a slide. And so they just determined it dangerous there and directed people to 4L instead. So really only 1R and 4L were usable. And they still got everybody off.
That's incredible they got everybody off with 2 slides.
Yeah. I mean, it was a light load. It was only 120-ish passengers, I think.
Okay.
But still, I mean, like, it's just, I don't know. Part of me says, of course it worked. Like, they're built in with redundancy and redundancy and redundancy. And I know they're supposed to be rated for only half the doors usable.
Yep.
So you have a half load and only a quarter of the doors, then, right, math says that should still be fine. But, yeah, it was interesting.
So, I mean, this, you know, it was a BA plane.
Yeah.
777, which means it had the Rolls-Royce engines. We know the Rolls-Royce engines have had lots of problems on the 777s. I mean, do you guys second guess at this point getting on one of these?
No.
Okay.
But I'm pretty stupid.
Fair enough.
I mean, so we got to think about the circumstances. I mean, you're at, you know, pretty high thrust output at takeoff.
Not full, though. It was, though it was hot. It was a light enough load that they didn't go full thrust.
Yeah, but so how did they say how much they went? Like what in they went to?
I don't remember. I saw it when I was reading, but it wasn't full. I just remember that.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, you know, I mean, you think about when you're cruising, I feel a lot more safe. Again, takeoff and landing are the two most perilous things of flight.
This is the other part that's creepy. The right engine was running for 44 seconds after the evacuation command was called.
Oh, shit.
And people went out through 1R.
That's bad.
Yeah.
I mean, that engine should have been shut off as soon as they, you know.
It's part of the evac checklist, if nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, you.
Yeah, that was bad.
I mean, so the engines aren't designed to shut off automatically once slides are deployed?
Apparently not.
I mean, am I being naive, or would that be a good idea?
I don't know if you want the engines to shut off when someone accidentally.
Part of me, like. You need them for interior power and other things. So maybe you need, like, you're supposed to be the APU at that point. Someone turned on the APU. That's the other thing. Like, no one remembered who pushed the button to turn on the APU, which I get, like, chaos, emergency. Not everybody's going to have perfect memory of all these things. But there's a little bit of it is training kicks in and things just happen. And no one remembers quite who pushed which button when, but everybody knows that the button got pushed, which is good news.
Right.
But also, it's sort of how it's supposed to happen, but you'd like to think that everybody did it exactly the way they were supposed to. And then you read back through and, like, people don't remember if they did or not. And then you see something else that's like, actually, this guy did it, not that guy.
So, well, I mean, they're high stress situations. So,
yeah. I mean, I don't second guess it at all, but it's, you know, that may be my naivete. Again, just like, it's kind of crazy.
Naivete. Can we call that? Can that be the title for the episode?
Sure. and so, I always, you know how hard it is for me to come up with it. Also, the flight attendants, two or three of them, made notes in their comments that they had to get people to stop smoking standing out next to the burning aircraft.
So just as a point of correction, this particular plane had GE engines. I didn't realize that BA had a mix on their 772s.
So, Foz, you basically can't leave the ground anymore.
I have to learn how to spell naivete to be able to use it.
Oh, man. Anyway.
Anyways.
Let's talk about flight radar and North Korean airspace. There's a blog post up on flight radar about North Korean airspace and kind of how it's relatively quiet over North Korea generally. But there's been a big stink about, you know, recently with the parade and the missile launches out of North Korea, that there's no planes flying over North Korea. It's clearly a bad sign. I mean, I saw some of this freaking out on Twitter, 2 weeks ago, and I thought it was laughable. But Seth,
you know. And it is, but it is laughable because that's like, there's never anybody flying over North Korea. But if you don't know that and you read the news like, oh gosh, something's happening in North Korea, there's a big military parade and there's about to be nuclear war. And you go and then you pull up flight radar and you're like, oh my God, planes are all avoiding North Korea.
We're all going to die.
Well, right. But that's a different problem. No one flies over North Korea is the short answer. Some Russian aircraft, I think S-7 has a scheduled flight that crosses it.
Yeah.
And North Korean, the Air Koryo obviously flies in and out. Air China just suspended their flights into Pyongyang, blaming it on lack of traffic.
Yeah. The Beijing Pyongyang flight.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I mean, I know we talked about this earlier in the year. I was thinking of going for the air show at the end of the summer. I'm thinking less about that now.
Yeah.
Not because I think it's dangerous, like in reality, but it's getting harder to justify.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate.
Yep, agreed.
But you know, so it goes.
So
anyway, I just thought that this flight radar post explaining that no one flies there and sort of what they track and they can show it like historically, don't use that as your measure of how close we are to nuclear Armageddon. There's many better tweets to use.
And in that case, I mean, Ukraine is clearly in the crapper. You look at like Ukrainian airspace, especially eastern Ukraine, Crimea, that's pretty much off limits.
Yep.
Most of eastern Syria, I mean, even western Syria is pretty off limits. Iraq is still kind of off limits depending on what part.
Is there not still the corridor right down the center, or has that moved over?
That corridor is still there, but you can't fly. I can't remember. It's Fallujah or Mosul. One of them you still can't fly over right now because of the fighting that's going on. So
yeah,
there's other parts of the world that no one flies over. So
yeah,
be careful.
Well, they're not as easy and obvious to spot as North Korea because it is truly like you see planes going and then making hard left and right turns.
You know what? When you and I took a trip to Korea, South Korea.
Yes.
And when we did our arrival there. And our departure. It is a little nerve-wracking because you know...
You're right up on the border.
Yeah, I mean, the airport is literally on the border. And you make these... I mean, it's probably 30 miles. But you look at a map and you look at the flight paths and they literally make a hard turn taking off to avoid going out into North Korean airspace. And on arrival, you come in and make hard turns to get to the landing. And it's a little nerve-wracking because you're like, okay, I know that they're not, you know, really at peace right now. So,
does it make you like? I always wonder as to why they chose that spot for the airport.
27 miles. It's out in. It's all landfill, right?
Yeah.
So it's a space that they could build out. They had that basically space where they could build the land. I mean, I guess, and there's a harbor sort of below it. It looks like, but that's. I don't know.
I mean. They could have moved it further south. I mean,
I think, it's landfill, but I think that half the island was sort of already there. So you have to pick which island you want to use. And there are some islands further south, but, you know, if you want to be relatively close to Seoul and make it somewhat transit friendly and whatever else.
Yep.
Right? It's like Narita. It's already in Incheon. It's already a different town away. But Seoul happens to be near the border. Like, you can't go how much further? Would 40 miles be better than 30? Does it matter at that point?
Well, if you've flown over Korea, once you start going south and east of Seoul, it's really barren.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they have plenty of options. So it's just it's strange that they decided to put it there, knowing that really it's a high risk area.
Yeah.
Go south and east and bulldoze a couple rice farms.
Yeah.
That worked so well for Narita.
Yeah.
you said it's 27 miles from the border?
Yeah, rough measurement from Google Maps.
I mean, that's – and when you think about 27 miles from an airplane, that's not very far. Like,
no, that's final.
Yeah, that's final, you know, and I mean, final's like 10 miles, but you double that, it's kind of
– Yeah, I can get it down to 23 at one border crossing.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of crazy. So, Seth, you had a topic you wanted to talk about a little bit. We can do that kind of quickly and wrap it up.
So – wrapping up the Holy Week as it is, we had Passover and Easter and Songkran. I'm sure I'm not saying that correctly, but the sort of Southeast Asian water festival of New Year's. And there's a lot of this type of week is all sorts of celebrations across many cultures, and they're all a little different, but it's all about rebirth and fertility and all those things. And it's time to plant the fields, essentially. But I'm curious. If we think about those different holidays in different places, if you got to choose a travel trip, get to plan a trip based on celebrating one of those events, do you have one that you would pick?
Hmm.
And I mean, I guess we sort of have to decide like what they mean in terms of which ones go where and put destinations on them. Like where do you go to celebrate Easter? Is there a specific place?
Yeah.
I would think Rome or Vatican City for Holy Mass would probably be the winner there, right? Go to Israel for Passover or go somewhere in Southeast Asia for Songkran. I don't know. It was a random thought I had walking to dinner tonight that I thought was an interesting sort of exercise.
It's an interesting question. I mean, I happened to be in London up until yesterday, and I didn't realize Easter for them is a 4-day weekend.
Hmm. Interesting.
So like, bank holidays.
Right, exactly. I'm like, well, that'd be a good time to go.
Yeah. Do they get Thursday and Friday or Friday and Monday?
Friday and Monday. Interesting.
Because Thursday's a holy day. It's Monday, Thursday. I forget.
Monday, which I just think is Monday, Thursday.
Monday. Yeah. I know. I pronounce it wrong on purpose, so it sounds like Monday. but, yeah, that's an interesting one.
I would – you know, I was thinking kind of when you'd asked this kind of offline, I was thinking about it. Vatican City would definitely be up there. The Philippines has a pretty heavily Catholic – population. Yeah. And they do some different things, and it's interesting kind of see the differences and stuff. So I would probably want to go there maybe. And then South America. All over South America.
Yeah. You want to do that for some of the festivals?
Yeah.
Same reason.
Some of the festivals, you know, to see kind of that kind of thing. And even like, I think it would be cool to do Passover, celebrate Passover in Israel or even in, some of the Jewish
City camp?
Yeah. or like any of the large Jewish communities in Europe, I think would be fascinating. Like,
well,
Russia.
I mean, part of me laughs a little bit. Like the thing to do used to be, if you lived in New York, was you moved to South Beach for the week. And the hotels down there would convert their kitchens, convert the whole ball, like the ballrooms would be giant seders, and then, you know, meals the rest of the week. But it meant you didn't have to convert your house.
And
it was spring break week, so you got a week on the beach in Florida in March/April, which, like, who doesn't love that idea coming out of New York back when we used to have winters?
And doesn't happen? Like, they don't do this anymore?
I think they probably, some of them still do, but I haven't looked in a while.
Not as big of a deal as it used to be.
I don't think it's quite as big a deal as it used to be. I have family that used to own one of those hotels, like in-laws sort of situations. But, so back in the day, it was before my time. By far, but back in like the 60s and 70s, I think they used to run that sort of show. So
yeah.
It's something that I'm always slightly attuned to.
I've saw some pictures of the water festival, like water gun fights and stuff in Bangkok and Chiang Mai. I would enjoy that. I think I would enjoy it a little less than I want to admit. Getting wet, you know. It's kind of like, what's the festival? Holly? Yeah, I don't know if I want to be have, you know, chalk and
dust. Chalk dust.
Yeah, I don't know if
apparently gets everywhere, even if you have like good sealed cameras and stuff. But also, it's interesting. Like, I think when I was in Bangkok last October-ish, there was talk about some of these festivals and how they are actually having water shortages of potable water.
Hmm.
So they were trying to figure out ways to cut back on some of the sort of water fight stuff while not destroying the tourism aspect of it, which is big.
Yeah.
And it's for locals, but I think, you know, I tend to agree with you in some ways. I feel like it might be a little too much put on for show for tourists and not quite the same as it once was in terms of local celebrating.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe we'll try to get Justin back on because he still lives over there.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I guess back in October when I was over there. But get him back on and see if he can give some insight into that. I know that he was there and celebrating this week, so yeah. Maybe we'll try that for a future awesome. Show. Strangely enough, as the token Jew for the show, I think I would actually probably find Holy Mass the most intriguing of those trip opportunities.
Yeah, I think
just for the spectacle that it is.
I think the Mass, would be, I mean,
I'd be terribly confused and have no idea what's going on, but I think seeing the people who are so devoted and so enamored by it would be an interesting way to play.
Yep, absolutely. If our listeners have somewhere they would go on Holy Week at the end of Holy Week, post a comment, tweet us. Interested to know. I think it's an interesting question because for some places, it's actually like a full, you get like 5 days off for like school. Like you get
New York City, because it's both Passover and Easter, they just close spring break for the week.
Yeah. And so for other places, like I know in Texas, some of us we would get basically Wednesday through Monday or Tuesday.
Not for Passover in Texas.
Yeah, definitely not for Passover, yeah. So, I think that changed recently. I'm not sure they do it as long. Nowadays, it's like you get Good Friday and that's it. So,
yeah.
But anyway. Well, guys, I think that's a show. What do you think? Any other topics?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Our listeners, you can find us on Twitter at DotsLines. You can leave us a comment at moredotsmorelines.com. You can leave a review on iTunes, Google Play Store. We'd love to hear from you. And, thanks for listening. Happy travels, and we'll see you next time. Bye, guys.
See you.
Take care.